Elevated Women Initiative, Mr. 12th Hour Prophetic Secretary Foundation, 9,012 out of Liberty Hill, Texas. Today is September 20, 2017, or it is Tishri 1. 2021, we will start our first service on this new moon Sabbath with a song and title, Worship the King. Oh, worship the King, how glorious above, and gratefully sing His wonderful love. Our shield and defender, the Ancient of Days, brilliant in splendor and girded with praise. Oh, tell of His might and sing of His grace. Whose robe is a light, eternal peace day. His chariots of wrath with the deep thunderclap form, and dark in His path on the wings of the storm. That bountiful care, what tongue can recite? It breathes in the air, it shines in the light. It springs from the hills, it descends to the plain, and sweetly distills it, the dew and the rain. Children of dust and feeble as frail, and we dearly trust now finally to fail. Thy mercies how tender, how firm to the end. Our Maker, Defender, Redeemer, and Friend. Atonement, Part 1. We're going to start our service today now by reading Psalms chapter 81, since this is on the new moon. It says, sing aloud unto Yahweh our strength. Make a joyful noise unto the Elohim of Jacob. Take a psalm and bring hither the timbrel and the pleasant harp with the psaltery. Blow up the trumpet in the new moon at a time appointed on our solemn feast day. For this was a statute for Israel and a law of the Elohim of Jacob. This he ordained in Joseph for a testimony when he went out through the land of Egypt, where I heard a language that I understood not. I removed his shoulder from the burden, his hands were delivered from the pots. Thou callest in trouble, and I delivered thee. I answered thee in the secret place of the thunder. I proved thee at the waters of Meribah. Hear, O my people, and I will testify unto thee, O Israel, if thou wilt hearken unto me. There shall no strange Yahweh be a God be in thee. Neither shalt thou worship any strange God. And the Yahweh the Elohim has brought thee out of the land of Egypt. Open thy mouth wide, and I will fill it. But my people would not hearken to my voice, and Israel would none of me. So I gave them up unto their own heart's lust, and they walked in their own counsel. Oh, that my people had hearkened unto me, and Israel had walked in my ways. I should soon have subdued their enemies, and turned my hand against their adversaries. For the haters of Yahweh should have submitted themselves unto Him, but their time should have endured forever. He should have fed them also with the finest of the wheat and with honey. Out of the rock should I have satisfied thee. End of Psalms 81. Okay, we're Atonement, Part 1. We're going to do the Patriarchs and Prophets, Chapter 30, by Ellen G. White, page 343. It's entitled The Tabernacle and Its Services. Okay, it says, the commandments communicated unto Moses while in the mount with the Yahweh. It says, let them make me a sanctuary, that I may dwell among them. And four directions were given for the construction of the tabernacle. By their apostasy, the Israelites forfeited the blessing of the divine presence, and for the time rendered impossible the erection of a sanctuary for the Yahweh among them. But after they were again taken into the favor with heaven, the great leader proceeded to execute the divine command. Chosen men were specially endowed by Yahweh with the skill and wisdom for the construction of the sacred building. Yahweh himself gave unto Moses the plan of that structure, with the particular directions as to its size and form. So it would be the same size as the one in heaven, after the pattern. The materials to be employed in every article of the furniture which it was to contain. For the holy places made with the hands were to be the figures of the true patterns of the things in the heavens. A miniature representation of the heavenly temple, for the Yahshua, our great high priest, after offering his life as a sacrifice, was to minister in the sinner's behalf. For the Yahweh presented before the Moses in the mount a view of the heavenly sanctuary, and commanded him to make all things according to the pattern shown him. All these directions were carefully recorded by the Moses, who communicated them unto the leaders of the people. For the building of the sanctuary's great and expensive preparation were necessary. A large amount of the most precious and costly material was required. Yet the Yahweh accepted only free will offering of every man that giveth it willingly with his heart. Ye shall take my offering, was a divine command repeated by the Moses to the congregation. Devotion of Yahweh and the spirit of the sacrifice were the first requisites in the preparing of a dwelling place for the Most High. All the people responded with one accord. They came, everyone whose heart stirred him up, and everyone whom his spirit made willing, and they brought the Yahweh's offerings to the work of the tabernacle of the congregation for all his service and for the holy garments, and they came, both men and women, as many as were willing-hearted, and brought bracelets and earrings and rings and tablets, all jewels of gold, and every man that offered an offering of gold unto the Yahweh. Now, this is amazing. All these golds and bracelets and stuff, these were visible idols that the children of Israel brought out of Egypt. And here, by being converted unto the truth, and they immediately understood that in order to participate in this erecting and building of this sanctuary, first thing they'd have to do is give up their idols. And every man with whom was found blue and purple and scarlet and fine linen and goat's hair and ram's skins dyed red and seal skins brought to them, everyone that did offer an offering of silver and brass, brought the Yahweh's offering, and every man with whom was found acacia wood for any work of the service brought it. And all the women that were wise-hearted did spin with their hands and brought that which they had spun the blue and the purple, the scarlet and the fine linen. And all the women his heart stirred them up, and the wisdom spun the goat's head. And the rulers brought the onyx stones, and the stones to be set for the ephod, and for the breastplate, and the spice, and the oil, for the light, and for the anointing oil, and for the sweet incense. While the building of the sanctuary was in progress, the people, old and young, men, women, and children, continued to bring their offerings until those in the charge of the work found that they had enough, and even more than could be used, and Moses caused to be proclaimed throughout the camp that neither man nor woman make any more work for the offering of the sanctuary. So the people were restrained from bringing the murmurings of the Israelites and the visitation of Yahweh's judgment, because their sins are recorded as a warning to after generations, and their devotion, their zeal, and liberality are an example worthy of the imitation. All who love the worship of Yahweh and prize the blessing of His sacred presence will manifest the same spirit of the sacrifice in the preparing of a house where He may meet with them. They will desire to bring to Yahweh an offering of the very best that they possess. The house built for Yahweh should not be left in debt, for He is thereby dishonored. An amount sufficient to accomplish the work should be freely given, that the workmen may be able to say, as did the builders of the tabernacle, "Bring no more offerings." For the tabernacle was so constructed that it could be taken apart and borne with the Israelites in all their journeyings. It was therefore small, being not more than 55 feet in length and 18 in height and breadth in height. Yet it was a magnificent structure. The wood employed for the building and its furniture was that of the acacia tree, which was less subject to decay than any other to be obtained at Sinai. The walls consisted of the upright boards set in the silver sockets and held firm by the pillars and connecting bars, and all were overlaid with gold, giving the building the appearance of solid gold. The roof was formed of four sets of the curtains, the innermost of the first twine linen, and blue and purple and scarlet, with the cherubims of the cunning work. The other three respectively were of the goat's hair, ram's skin dyed red, and seal skin, so arranged as to afford complete protection. The building was divided into two apartments by a rich and beautiful curtain or veil, suspended from the gold-plated pillars, and a small veil closed the entrance of the first apartment. These, like the inner covering, which formed the ceiling, were of the most gorgeous colors, blue, purple, and scarlet, beautifully arranged, while in wrought with the threads of the gold and silver were cherubim to represent the angelic host who are connected with the work of the heavenly sanctuary and who are ministering spirits unto the people of Yahweh on earth. The sacred tent was enclosed in an open space called the court, which was surrounded by the hanging or screens of the fine linen, suspended from the pillars of the brass. The entrance to this enclosure was at the eastern end. It was closed by the curtains of costly material and beautiful workmanship. Though inferior to those of the sanctuary, the hangings of the court being only about half as high as the walls of the tabernacle, The building could be plainly seen by the people without. In the court, and nearest the entrance, stood the brazen altar of the burnt offering. Upon this altar were consumed all the sacrifices made by the Father Yahweh, and its horns were sprinkled with the atoning blood. Between the altar and the door of the tabernacle was the laver, which was also of the brass, made from the mirrors that had been the freewill offering of the women of Israel. At the laver, the priests were to wash their hands and their feet whenever they went into the sacred apartments or approached the altar to offer a burnt offering unto Yahweh. In the first apartment, our holy place, were the tabernacle of the showbread.
The table.
In the first apartment, our holy place, were the table of the showbread, the candlestick or lampstand, and the altar of the incense. For the table of the showbread stood on the north with its ornamental crown. It was overlaid with pure gold. On this table, the priests were each Sabbath to place 12 cakes arranged in the two piles and sprinkled with the frankincense. The loaves that were removed, being counted holy, were to be eaten by the priest. On the south was a 7-branch candlestick with its 7 lamps. Its branches were ornamented with the exquisitely wrought flowers resembling lilies, and the whole was made from one solid piece of the gold. There being no windows in the tabernacle, the lamps were never all extinguished at the one time, but shed their light by the day and by the night. Just before the veil separating the holy place from the most holy and the immediate presence of the Yahweh stood the golden altar of the incense. Upon this altar, the priest was to burn incense every morning and evening. His horns were touched with the blood of the sin offering, and it was sprinkled with the blood upon the great day of the atonement. The fire upon this altar was kindled by Yahweh himself and was sacredly cherished. Day and night, the holy incense diffused its fragrance throughout the sacred apartment and without far around the tabernacle. Beyond the inner veil was the Holy of Holies, where centered the symbolic service of the atonement and intercession, and which formed the connecting link between the heaven and earth. In this apartment was the ark, a chest of the acacia wood, overlaid within and without with the gold, and having a crown of gold about the top. It was made as a depository for the tables of the stone upon which Yahweh himself had inscribed the Ten Commandments. Hence it was called the Ark of Yahweh's Testament, or the Ark of the Covenant, since the Ten Commandments were the basis of the covenant made between Yahweh and Israel. The covering of the sacred chest was called the mercy seat. This was wrought of the one solid piece of gold and was surmounted by the golden cherubim, one standing on each end. One, a wing of each angel, was stretched forth on high, while the other was folded over the body in the token of the reverence and humility. for the position of the cherubim, with their faces turned toward each other and looking reverently downward toward the ark, represented the reverence with which the heavenly hosts regard the law of Yahweh and their interest in the plan of the redemption. Above the mercy seat was the Shekinah, the manifestation of the divine presence, and from between the cherubim, Yahweh made known his will. Divine messages were sometimes communicated to the high priest by a voice from the cloud. Sometimes a light fell upon the angel at the right to signify approval or acceptance, or a shadow or cloud rested upon the one at the left to reveal disapproval or rejection. The law of Yahweh enshrined within the ark was the great rule of the righteousness and judgment. That law pronounced death upon the transgressor. But above the law was the mercy seat upon which the presence of Yahweh was revealed, and from which, by the virtue of the atonement, pardon was granted to the repentant sinner. Thus, in the work of Yahshua for our redemption, symbolized by the sanctuary service, mercy and truth are met together, righteousness and peace have kissed each other. No language can describe the glory of the rescue presented within the sanctuary. Describe the glory of the scene presented in the sanctuary. The gold-plated walls reflecting the light from the golden candlestick, the brilliant hues of the richly embroidered curtains with their shining angels, the table and the altar of the incense glittering with the gold, beyond the second veil, the sacred ark with its mystic cherubim, and above it the holy Shekinah, the visible manifestation of the Yahweh's presence, all but a dim reflection of the glories of the temple of Yahweh in the heaven, the great center of the work for the man's redemption. A period of about half a year was occupied in the building of the tabernacle. When it was completed, Moses examined all the work of the builders, comparing it with the pattern shown him in the mount and the directions he had received from Yahweh. As Yahweh had commanded, even so had they done it. And Moses blessed them. With eager interest, the multitude of the Israel crowded around to look upon the sacred structure. While they were contemplating the scene with a reverent sense of satisfaction, the pillar of the cloud floated over the sanctuary and descended, enveloped it. And the glory of Yahweh filled the tabernacle. It was a revealing of the divine majesty, and for a time even Moses could not enter. With a deep emotion, the people beheld the token that the work of their hands was accepted. There were no loud demonstrations of the rejoicing. A solemn awe rested upon all. But the gladness of their hearts welled up in the tears of joy, and they murmured low, earnest words of the gratitude that Yahweh had condescended to abide with them. By the divine direction, the tribe of the Levi was set apart for the service of the sanctuary. In the earliest times, every man was the priest of his own household. In the days of Abraham, the priesthood was regarded as the birthright of the eldest son. Now, instead of the firstborn of all Israel, Yahweh accepted the tribe of Levi for the work of the sanctuary. By this signal honor, he manifested his approval of their fidelity, both in adhering unto his service and in the executing of his judgments. When Israel apostatized in their worship of the golden calf, their priesthood, however, was restricted to the family of Aaron. Aaron and his sons alone were permitted to minister before the Yahweh. The rest of the tribe were entrusted with the charge of the tabernacle and its furniture, and they were to attend upon the priest in their ministration, but they were not to sacrifice, to burn incense, or to see the holy things till they were covered. In accordance with their office, a special dress was appointed for the priest. Thou shalt make holy garments for Aaron thy brother, for glory and for beauty, for the divine direction to Moses. The robe of the common priest was of the white linen, and woven into one piece. It extended nearly to the feet, and was confined about the waist by a white linen girdle embroidered in the blue, purple, and red. A linen turban or mitre completed his outer costume. Moses at the burning bush was directed to put off his sandal, for the ground of where on he stood was holy. So the priest were not to enter the sanctuary with the shoes upon their feet. Particles of the dust caving under them would desecrate the holy place. They were to leave their shoes in the court before entering the sanctuary, and also to wash both their hands and their feet before ministering in the tabernacle or at the altar of the burnt offering. Thus was constantly taught the lesson that all defilement must be put away from those who would approach into the presence of the Yahweh. For the garments of the high priest were the costly material and beautiful workmanship befitting his exalted station. In addition to the linen dress of the common priest, he wore a robe of the blue, also woven into one piece. Around the skirt it was ornamented with the golden bells and pomegranates of the blue, purple, and scarlet. Outside of this was the ephod, a shorter garment of the gold, blue, purple, scarlet, and white. It was confined by a girdle of the same colors, beautifully wrought. The ephod was sleeveless and on his gold embroidered shoulder pieces were set in two honor stones bearing the names of the 12 tribes of Israel. Over the ephod was a breastplate, the most sacred of the priestly vestments. This was the same material as the ephod. It was in the form of a square measuring a span and was suspended from the shoulders by a cord of the blue from the golden rings, for the border was formed of a variety of the precious stone, the same that formed the 12 foundations of the city of Yahweh. Within the border were 12 stones set in the gold, arranged in the rows of the four, and like those in the shoulder pieces engraved with the names of the tribes, the Yahweh's direction was, Aaron shall bear the names of the children of Israel in the breastplate of the judgment upon his heart when he goeth in unto the holy place, for a memorial before the Yahweh continually. So Yahshua, the great high priest, pleading his blood before the Father in the sinner's behalf, bears upon his heart the name of every repentant believing soul. Says the psalmist, I am poor and needy, yet the Yahweh thinketh upon me. At the right and left of the breastplate were two large stones of the great brilliancy. These were known as the Urim and Thummim. By them, the will of the Elohim was made known through the high priest. When questions were brought for the decision between the Yahweh, a halo of light encircling the precious stone at the right was a token of the divine consent or approval, while a cloud shadowing the stone at the left was an evidence of the denial and disapprobation. For the matter of the high priest consisted of the white linen turban, having attached to it by a lace of the blue a gold plate bearing the inscription Holiness of the Yahweh. Everything connected with the apparel and deportment of the priest was to be such as to impress the beholder with a sense of the holiness of the Yahweh, the sacredness of his worship, and the purity required of those who came into his presence. Not only the sanctuary itself, but the ministration of the priest was to serve unto the example and shadow of the heavenly thing. Thus it was of the great importance, and the Yahweh through the Moses gave the most definite and explicit instruction concerning every point of this typical service. The ministration of the sanctuary consisted of the two divisions, a daily and a yearly service. The daily service was performed at the altar of the burnt offering in the court of the tabernacle and in the holy place, while the yearly service was in the most holy. No mortal eye but that of the high priest was to look upon the inner circle or the inner apartment of the sanctuary. Only once a year could the priest enter there, and that after the most careful and solemn preparation, with the trembling he went in before Yahweh, and the people in the reverent silence awaited his return, their hearts uplifted in the earnest prayer for the divine blessing. Before the mercy seat, the high priest made the atonement for Israel, and in the cloud of the glory, Yahweh met with him. His stay here beyond the accustomed time filled them with the fear, lest because of their sins are his own, he had been slain by the glory of the Yahweh. The daily service consisted of the morning and evening burnt offering, the offering of the sweet incense on the golden altar, and the special offerings for the individual sins, and there were also offerings for the Sabbath, new moons, and special feasts. Every morning and evening a lamb of a year old was burned upon the altar, with its appropriate meat offering, thus symbolizing the daily consecration of the nation unto Yahweh, and their constant dependence upon the atoning blood of Yahshua. The Yahweh expressly directed that every offering presented for the service of the sanctuary should be without blemish. The priests were to examine all animals brought as a sacrifice and were to reject every one in which a defect was discovered. Only an offering without the blemish should be a symbol of his perfect purity. He was to offer himself as a lamb without blemish and without spot. For the Apostle Paul points to these sacrifices as an illustration of what the followers of Yahshua are to become. He says, I beseech you therefore, brethren, by the mercies of Yahweh, that you present your bodies a living sacrifice, wholly acceptable unto Yahweh, which is your reasonable service. We are to give ourselves to the service of Yahweh, and we should seek to make the offering as nearly perfect as possible. Yahweh will not be pleased with anything less than the best we can offer. Those who love him with all the heart will desire to give him the best service of the life, and they will be constantly seeking to bring every power of their being into harmony with the laws that will promote their ability to do his will. And the offering of the incense, the priest, was brought more directly into the presence of the Yahweh than in any other act of the daily administration, as the inner veil of the sanctuary did not extend unto the top of the building. The glory of Yahweh, which was manifested above the mercy seat, was partially visible from the first apartment. When the priest offered incense before the Yahweh, he looked toward the ark, and as the cloud of incense arose, the divine glory descended upon the mercy seat and filled the most holy place, and often so filled both apartments that the priest was obliged to retire to the door of the tabernacle, as in that typical service. The priest looked by faith into the mercy seat, which he could not see. So the people of the Yahweh are now to direct their prayers to Yahshua, their great high priest, who, unseen by the human vision, is pleading in their behalf in the sanctuary above. The incense ascending with the prayers of the Israel represents the merits of and intercession of Yahshua, his perfect righteousness, pursuing a faith in the blood of the everlasting covenant is imputed unto his people, which can alone make the worship of the sinful beings acceptable unto Yahweh. Before the veil of the most holy place was an altar of the perpetual intercession. Before the holy, an altar of the continual atonement, by the blood and by the incense, Yahweh was to be approached. Symbols pointing unto the great mediator through whom sinners may approach Yahweh, and through whom alone mercy and salvation can be granted to the repentant believing soul. As the priest morning and evening entered the holy place at the time of the incense, the daily sacrifice was ready to be offered upon the altar in the court without. This was a time of the intense interest to the worshippers assembled at the tabernacle. Before entering into the presence of Yahweh through the ministration of the priests, they were to engage in the earnest searching of the heart and confession of the sin. They united in a silent prayer with their faces toward the holy place. Thus their petitions ascended with the cloud of the incense, while the faith laid hold upon the merits of the promised Savior, prefigured by the atoning sacrifice. The hours of the appointed for the morning and the evening sacrifice were regarded as sacred, and they came to be observed as the set time for the worship throughout the Jewish nation. And when in the later times the Jews were scattered as captives in the distant lands, they still at the appointed hour turned their faces toward Jerusalem and offered up their petitions to the Elohim of Israel. In this custom, Christians have an example for the morning and evening prayer. While Elohim condemns a mere round of ceremonies without the spirit of the worship, he looks with great pleasure upon those who love him, bowing morning and evening to seek pardon for the sins committed and to present their request for the needed blessing. The showbread was kept ever before the Yahweh as a perpetual offering. Thus it was a part of the daily sacrifice. It was called showbread, or bread of the presence, because it was ever before the face of the Yahweh. It was an acknowledgement of the man's dependence upon Elohim for both temporal and spiritual food, and that it is received only through the mediation of Yahshua. Yahweh had fed Israel in the wilderness with the bread from the heaven, and they were still dependent upon his bounty, both for the temporal food and spiritual blessing. Both the manna and the showbread pointed unto Yeshua, the living bread who is ever in the presence of Yahweh for us. He himself said, I am the living bread which came down from the heaven. Frankincense was placed upon the load when the bread was removed every Sabbath to be replaced by the fresh loaves. The frankincense was burned upon the altar as a memorial before the Yahweh. Well, the most important part of the daily ministration was the service performed in the behalf of individuals. For the repentant sinner brought his offering to the door of the tabernacle and placed his hand upon the victim's head, confessed his sin, thus in the figure transferring them from himself unto the innocent sacrifice. By his own hand the animal was then slain, and the blood was shed by the priest into the holy place, and sprinkled before the veil, behind which was the ark containing the law that the sinner had transgressed. By this ceremony the sinner was, through the blood, transferred in the figure unto the sanctuary. In some cases the blood was not taken until the holy place. But the flesh was then to be eaten by the priest, as Moses directed the sons of Aaron, saying, for the Yahweh has given it to you to bear the iniquity of the congregation, Leviticus 10:17. Both the ceremonies alike symbolize the transfer of the sin from the penitent unto the sanctuary. Page 354. Patriarchy. Oh no, that's the end of 354. Such was the work that went on day by day through the year. The sins of the Israel being thus transferred to the sanctuary, as the holy places were defiled, and a special work became necessary for the removal of the sin. For the Yahweh commanded that an atonement be made for each of the sacred apartments, as far as for the altar, to cleanse it and hallow it from the uncleanness of the children of Israel, Leviticus 16:19. Once a year, on the day of the atonement, the priest entered the most holy place for the cleansing of the sanctuary. For the work there performed completed the yearly round of the ministration. On the day of the atonement, two kids of the ghosts were brought to the door of the tabernacle, and lots were cast upon them. One lot for the Yahweh, and the other lot for the scapegoat. The goat upon which the first lot fell was to be slain as a sin offering for the people, and the priest was to bring his blood within the veil and sprinkle it upon the mercy seat. And he shall make an atonement for the holy place, because of the uncleanness of the children of Israel, and because of their transgression and all their sins, and so shall he do for the tabernacle of the congregation that remaineth among them in the midst of their uncleanness. And Aaron shall lay both his hands upon the head of the live goat, and confess over him all the iniquities of the children of Israel, and all their transgressions, and all their sins, putting them upon the head of the goat, and shall send him away by the hand of a fit man into the wilderness, and the goat shall bear upon him all their iniquities into a land not inhabited. Not until the goat had been thus sent away did the people regard themselves as freed from the burden of their sin. Every man was to afflict his soul while the work of the atonement was going forward. All business was laid aside, and the whole congregation of Israel spent the day in the soul humiliation before the Yahweh with the prayer, fasting, and deep searching of the heart. For the important truths concerning the atonement were taught the people by their yearly service. And the sin offerings presented during the year, a substitute had been accepted in the sinner's stead, but the blood of the victim had not made full atonement for the sin. It had only provided a means by which the sin was transferred to the sanctuary. By the offering of the blood, the sinners acknowledged the authority of the law, confessed the guilt of his transgression, and expressed his faith in him who was to take away the sin of the world. But he was not entirely released from the condemnation of the law. On the day of the atonement, the high priest, having taken an offering for the congregation, went into the most holy place with the blood and sprinkled it upon the mercy seat above the tables of the law. Thus the claims of the law which demanded the life of the sinner were satisfied. Then in his character of the mediator, as the priest took the sins upon himself, and leaving the sanctuary, he bore with him the burden of the Israel's guilt. In the door of the tabernacle, he laid his hands upon the head of the scapegoat and confessed over him all the iniquities of the children of Israel, and all their transgressions and all their sins, putting them upon the head of the goat. And as the goat bearing these sins was sent away, they were with him regarded as forever separated from the people. Such was the service performed unto the example and shadow of the heavenly things. Hebrews 8:5. As has been stated, in the earth the sanctuary was built by the Moses according unto the pattern shown him in the mount, for it was a figure for the time then present, in which were offered both gifts and sacrifices. Its two holy places were the patterns of the things in the heavens. But Yeshua, our high great high priest, is a minister of the sanctuary and of the true tabernacle, which the Yahweh pitched and not man. Hebrews 9:9, 23:8-2. As in the vision, the apostle John was granted a view of the temple of Yahweh in the heaven. He beheld there seven lamps of fire burning before the throne. He saw an angel having a golden censer, and there was given unto him much incense that he should offer with the prayers of all saints upon the golden altar, which was before the throne, Revelation 4:5-8:3. Here the prophet was permitted to behold the first apartment of the sanctuary in the heaven, and he saw there the seven lamps of fire, and the golden altar represented by the golden candlestick, and the altar of the incense in the sanctuary on earth. Again, the temple of Yahweh was opened, Revelation 11:19. And he looked within the inner veil upon the Holy of Holies. Here he beheld the Ark of his Testament, Revelation 11:19, represented by the sacred chest constructed by the Moses for the containing of the law of Yahweh. For the Moses is with the making of the earth a sanctuary according unto the fashion that he has seen. For the Paul is with the declaring that the tabernacle and all the vessels of the ministry, when completed, were as the patterns of the things in the heavens, Acts 7:44, Hebrews 9:21-23, and John says that he saw the sanctuary in the heaven. That sanctuary is in which the Yahshua ministers, and our behalf is a great original of which the sanctuary built by the Moses was a copy. Patriarchs and Prophets, page 357. For the heavenly temple, as the abiding place of the King of the Kings, where the thousands ministered unto him, and 10,000 times 10,000 stood before him, Daniel 7:10, that temple filled with the glory of the eternal throne, where the seraphim, its shining guardians, veil their faces in the adoration. No earthly structure could represent his vastness and his glory, yet important truths concerning the heavenly sanctuary and the great work there carried forward for the man's redemption were to be taught by the earthly sanctuary and his services. After his ascension, our Savior was to begin his work as our high priest, says the Paul. For the Yahshua had not entered into the holy places made of the hand, which are the figures of the true, but into the heaven itself, now to appear in the presence of the Elohim for us, Hebrews 9:24. As the Yahshua's ministration was to consist of two great divisions, each occupying a period of time, and having a distinctive place in the heavenly sanctuary, so the typical ministration consisted of the two divisions, the daily and the yearly service, and unto each a department of the tabernacle was devoted. As the Yahshua at his ascension appeared in the presence of Yahweh for the pleading of his blood in the behalf of the penitent sinners or the penitent believers, so the priest in the daily ministration sprinkled the blood of the sacrifice in the holy place in the sinner's behalf. Hebrews 3:57. For the blood of Yahshua, while it was to release the repentant sinner from the condemnation of the law, was not to cancel the sin. It would stand on record in the sanctuary until the final atonement. So in the type, the blood of the sin offering removed the sin from the penitent, but it rested in the sanctuary until the day of the atonement. In the great day of the final award, the dead are to be judged out of those things which are written in the books according unto their works. Revelation 20:12. Then by the virtue of the atoning blood of Yahshua, the sins of all the true dependent will be blotted from the books of the heaven. Thus the sanctuary will be freed or cleansed from the record of sin and the tithe. This great work of the atonement or blotting out of the sin was represented by the services of the Day of the Atonement. The cleansing of the earthly sanctuary, which was accomplished by the removal, by the virtue of the blood of the sin offering, of the sins by which it had been polluted. As in the final atonement, the sins of the true repentant are to be blotted from the records of the heaven, no more to be remembered or come into the mind, so in the tithe, they were borne away into the wilderness, forever separated from the congregation. Since the Satan is the originator of the sin, the direct instigator of all the sin that caused the death of the Son of the Yahweh, justice demands that Satan shall suffer the final punishment for the Yahshua's work for the redemption of the men and for the purification of the universe from the sin will be closed by the removal of sin from the heavenly sanctuary and the placing of those sins upon the Satan, who will bear the final penalty. So in the typical service, the yearly round administration filled with the purification of the sanctuary and the confessing of the sins on the head of the scapegoat. Thus the administration of the tabernacle and of the temple that afterwards took his place, the people were taught each day the great truths relative unto Yahshua's death and ministration, and once each year their minds were carried forward to the closing events of the great controversy between Yahshua and Satan, the final purification of the universe of sin and sinners. Okay, it says that ends chapter 30. This now I go into chapter 31. Okay, then let's go ahead and look into a little bit of chapter 31, the sin of Nadab and Abihu. After the dedication of the tabernacle, the priests were consecrated unto their sacred office. These services occupied 7 days, each marked by the special ceremony. On the eighth day, they entered upon their administration. Assisted by his sons, Aaron offered the sacrifice that Yahweh required, and he lifted up his hand and blessed the people. All had been done as Yahweh commanded, and he accepted the sacrifice and revealed his glory in a remarkable manner. Fire came from the Yahweh and consumed the offering upon the altar. The people looked upon this wonderful manifestation of the divine power with awe and intense interest. They saw it as a token of Yahweh's glory and favor, and they raised a universal shout of the praise and adoration and fell on their faces as if in the immediate presence of the Yahweh. But soon after, a sudden and terrible calamity fell upon the family of the Most High at the hour of the worship. At the hour of the worship, this is at the sacred hour, the third hour of the day or the ninth hour of the day. As the prayers and prayer of the people were ascending unto Yahweh, two of the sons of Aaron took each his censer and burned fragrant incense thereon to rise as a sweet odor before the Yahweh. But they transgressed his command by the use of the strange fire. For burning the incense, they took common instead of the sacred fire which Elohim himself had kindled and which he had commanded to be used for this purpose. For this sin, a fire went out from the Yahweh and devoured them in the sight of the people. So this fire had to be offered, the sacred fire had to be offered at the time of the sacred hour. It's all called sacred. Next to Moses and Aaron and Nadab and Abihu had stood highest in Israel. They had been especially honored by the Yahweh, having been permitted by the 70 elders to behold the glory in the mount. But their transgression was not therefore to be excused or lightly regarded. All this rendered their sin more grievous, because because men have received the great light, because they have, like the princes of Israel, ascended to the mount and been privileged to have communion with Yahweh and to dwell in the light of his glory. Let them not flatter themselves that they can after sin with impunity. That because they have been thus honored, Yahweh will not be strict to punish their iniquity. This is a fatal deception. The great light and privilege bestowed requires a return of virtue and holiness corresponding to the light given. Anything short of this, Yahweh cannot accept. Great blessings or privileges should never lull to security or carelessness. They should never give license to sin or cause the recipients to feel that Elohim will not accept, exact with them. All the advantages that Yahweh's people have given are his means to throw ardor into the spirit and zeal into the effort and vigor into the carrying out of his holy will. This brings it to the last day of this hour. Contact us at the 11th hour call, and that's number 11. Click on our audio archive. We're going to close now with a song. Who at my door is standing? Who at my door is standing? Patiently drawing near, entrance within demanding. This is the voice I hear. Sweetly the tongues have fallen. Open the door for me. If ever heed my calling, I will abide with thee. All through the dark hours dreary, knocking again is he. Yahshua, thou art not. weary, waiting so long for me. Sweetly the tones are falling, open the door for me. If ever heed my calling, I will abide with thee. Door of my heart I hasten, even a hope and light. Though he rebuke and chasten, he shall with me abide. Sweetly the tones are falling, open the door for me. If thou wilt heed my calling, I will abide with thee.